Open up the Committee on House Business and Labor for May 15th, 2013. And today, before we get started, it's going to be kind of a short day. Understand there's a caucus at 9:30, so we'll try to get as much as we can done by then. We have a public hearing and then informational hearing from Workforce Oregon. So with that, I think what we'll do is we'll open the public hearing on Senate Bill 849.
Madam Chair and committee members, the measure allows the exclusion from the definition of employment for purposes of qualifying for unemployment insurance benefits those services that are performed for a corporation by an individual with substantial ownership interest in the corporation and who is the sole corporate officer and director. Specifies that the exclusion can only apply after Oregon is in the unemployment insurance tax schedule 4 or lower, takes effect 91st day following signing die. No amendments, and you have a revenue statement issued and a fiscal statement issued.
Okay, thank you.
So whoever wants to go first?
I'll start. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thanks for letting me testify. My name is Robert Unger. I'm a legislative assistant for Senator Floyd Przanski. Testifying on behalf of my boss. He apologizes for not being here. He's chairing his Judiciary Committee.
Unger, you're far better looking than your boss.
Oh, well, thank you so much. This issue was brought forward to us by a constituent. He is the sole proprietor, sole board member, and sole employee of his corporation. Under Oregon statute, he requested exemption from unemployment insurance under the Family Corporate Officer Exclusion Statute. He was subsequently denied by the Employment Division, I believe based on statute and associated administrative rules. This exemption is basically available for two or more corporate officers from the same family, and we believe it was a bit of an oversight not extending it to sole owners. Being the sole owner, officer, or employee, there would be really no situation where he would legally terminate his own employment and apply for unemployment. Senate Bill 849 would close the gap in Oregon's unemployment insurance laws, reducing an unfair burden on some of Oregon's smallest corporations. It passed out of committee unanimously and through the Senate floor unanimously, and we worked closely with the Employment Division to draft this legislation. Here with me is a representative. He can explain any fiscal ramifications that you guys, questions that you guys have, and thanks so much for the opportunity to testify.
Hey, thank you. David?
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. For the record, David Gerstenfeld with the Employment Department, here testifying on Senate Bill 849. This does expand an existing exclusion in the Employment Department law to the Unemployment Insurance Program. It's an optional exclusion. There's a statute that currently provides that, and I'm going to quote the language, corporate officers who are directors of the corporation, who have a substantial ownership interest in the corporation, and who are members of the same family, can opt out of the UI system. And that means that wages that those individuals are paid are not subject to the UI tax and don't contribute to make them eligible for UI benefits, for unemployment insurance benefits. That's an optional exclusion that they can elect to take or not. That language has been interpreted by us, and the Court of Appeals confirmed that that is the required interpretation, that that only applies if there are multiple family members. So how this plays out is that if two related people start a corporation together, they can make that election and opt not to have their wages subject to the tax. But if someone starts a corporation and they are the only corporate officer, they cannot make that same election. So this bill would change that and give sole corporate officers, directors, owners the same election, the same opportunity to make that election that related family members can. This is very similar to House Bill 2243, I believe, that the agency had been looking at earlier. We did become concerned about the potential fiscal impact on employers across the state because we are in the highest tax schedule right now. So the primary difference between that and Senate Bill 849, Senate Bill 849 does not allow individuals to make that election until we have moved into a lower employer tax schedule once the trust fund has replenished from the burden of the recession. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Any questions?
No. Just a real quick one. Is there a statutory definition of substantial ownership?
Chair Doherty, Representative Thatcher, there is not. We do have a rule that talks about that. That has never been the real deciding factor that we've looked at. Most frequently, it's been looking at the family members, the issue that's come up most frequently.
So really, it's being applied as ownership.
We would require, it has to be substantial if someone owns, you know, 1/1000th of a share of a corporation. We would probably say that that is not substantial. What we've typically seen are people that own significant percentages of the corporate stock.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Those are the only two we have signed up for this panel. Anybody else like to speak on Senate Bill 849? Okay, seeing none, I close the public hearing on Senate Bill 849. And I'm going to open up an informational meeting. I guess I don't have to gavel that.
Yeah. Well, do you not want to do
that? Do we want to work this?
Yes, we want to work this.
We have enough people. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. We've got enough people.
Back in.
Okay, you're back.
Strike while the iron's hot. Representative Holtby's ready for a yes.
He's ready. Okay, we will open a work session on Senate Bill 849.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 849 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Barton moves House Bill 849, Senate Bill 849 to the House with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none. Brandon, if you call the roll.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Representative Holtby.
Aye.
Representative Fagan.
Excused.
Representative Thatcher.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Representative
Weidner.
Aye.
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative Kenemer.
Excused.
Vice Chair Representative Barton.
Aye.
Chair Representative Doherty.
Aye. Okay, with that, the motion carried passes. Do we have Senate Bill 849 is moving to the floor? Consent agenda or?
The consent is going to get no votes. If someone carries it, it'll get yes votes. And
did you want to carry it also? Or?
No, I don't care.
Okay, so Representative Weidner will carry it. Okay, with that, we close the work session on Senate Bill 849. We'll open up an informational hearing with Oregon Workforce. So if you'd like to come up and... Welcome.
Good morning. Get ourselves set here. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Graham Slater, and I'm the administrator of the Employment Department's Workforce and Economic Research Division, and you'll get a sense in the next few minutes of exactly what that means and what we do. We appreciate the chance to come do this informational hearing for you this morning. Nick Belaichik is our state employment economist, and Nick will formally introduce himself later in the presentation when he takes some of the slides. We appreciate the invitation to share some of these overview slides of what's going on in Oregon's workforce, and as I'm sure many of you know, there's been a lot going on in these last particularly 5 or 6 years. We are part of a federal-state collaborative system with the federal government, particularly the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and each state has people like us typically in their employment department type agency. We're responsible for things like the unemployment rate, what industries are going up or down, career information, a wide variety of things that you hear. You may even have heard yesterday the news release that Oregon's new unemployment rate was released, and we'll mention that in one of our later slides. One of the things we try to do, though, is not just bury people in data and graphs and economic talk. What we try to do is to take all that and make it meaningful and interesting and useful to any audience, including yourselves. And one of the ways we do that is look for the key trends. That, you know, among all of the numbers that we look at, what are the key trends that people need to be aware of? And there's 5 things that we'd like to chat with you about this morning, and we know that some of you will need to leave, so we will try to move fairly quickly, get as far as we can by the 9:30 point. So when I give presentations, I love to joke with the audience and say, we are now going to look at this graph line by line. You're going to understand every single thing on the graph. And then, of course, I say, no, not really.
A little economist humor.
It raises a little economist humor, by manager. But, you know, there's a great takeaway message from this kind of graph. If you look at all those lines, all you need to know is that every line represents a recession in Oregon since World War II. And how far down it goes tells you how many jobs we lost, and how quickly it gets back tells you how long it took us to get back to the pre-recession employment level. And a whole bunch of those lines are back in 2 years. That was what people thought a recession looked like. We lost a bunch of jobs. 2 years later, most of them or all of them were back, and we got on with life. The black line that's sort of central there, it doesn't go down that far, but it takes a long time to get back. That was the recession of the early 2000s. And we heard a lot of people talking about a jobless recovery. The economy was recovering, businesses were doing better, but they weren't hiring all the people back. And that was a little bit different, and it merited discussion. The line that goes way, way down was really two national recessions. That was the early 1980s. I was just starting my career. Some of you were probably working in Oregon at the time, and you remember that was a many-year period, 7 years, according to the graph, of job loss and very, very slow job gain. So that was clearly the outlier for Oregon's history. And you probably know where I'm going now. The red line that doesn't go down quite as far, but it's taking an awful long time to come back, that's the current recession, or the current recovery, if you want to call it that, that we're in right now. And so I think it's interesting for some new Oregonians or younger people to realize that the job losses in the 1980s were even worse, measurably worse, than what we've experienced in the last few years. And the last few years seem terrible. So those of you that were here, you remember the 80s were really, really bad. Even so, it's looking like about 7 or more years to get back to the employment level where we started before this particular recession came. So let me put some numbers on that. This is just a graph simply of employment in Oregon. And the quick numbers takeaway here is that we lost about 150,000 jobs in this recession. And even though we've been in theory in a recovery mode for quite a while, we've only gained back about half of those jobs. So this is not a case where everything's back to normal and people are feeling great. We still have a lot of Oregonians unemployed, doing various things, maybe looking for jobs not in their career field, just doing whatever they can to make ends meet at this point in the recession. Unemployment rates, of course, went up, because if you're laying off 5, 10, 15,000 people every month, the unemployment rate will skyrocket. And you see the very dramatic increase in this graph for Oregon's unemployment rate. We started around the 6% range. As of yesterday and most of this year, we're in the 8% range, but we almost got to the 11.5, 12 range during the worst of the recession. And Nick will talk a little bit about why is the unemployment coming down here. It's not all about people getting jobs, because as I just mentioned, we're not adding jobs that quickly. The last few months have been good, but we're only halfway back to that pre-employment level. So it's not that every unemployed person is happily going back to employment. There's a lot of other things going on. And this graph shows you just not rates, because that is economic talk. This talks about people. And I really think it's important to focus on that. There were about 100,000 Oregonians unemployed before this recession. And there's always going to be some unemployed. They're between jobs. Maybe they truly don't have good skills, and they will struggle in any economy. Some of them have wonderful skills, and they're just between jobs. So there's always some level of unemployment. It was about 100,000. But it went up to about 250,000 during the worst of the recession. And I often say to audiences, if you had a company and you had a steady customer base of 100,000 customers that repeatedly you served, you produced products for, and somebody told you 15 months from now, your customer base will go from 100,000 to 250,000, and you've got a year to plan for it, you would be thrilled. You'd be hiring people, training them, getting ready to produce more. In reality, this graph is not thrilling because the number we're looking at is unemployed Oregonians. But it did go from 100,000 to 250,000. Yes, it's been coming down. Some of them have found jobs. Some of them have just dropped out. Some of them aren't looking. Some of them have maybe retired much earlier than they planned, because at this point, at least, they don't think there's going to be a job. So they're making do with whatever savings they had, but it certainly is probably not what they dreamed of. It's not all doom and gloom. Some industries are actually doing quite well. And the top left is something called professional and technical services. And that's one of those industries with pretty high wage jobs. So it's great. It's engineering companies, accounting firms, computer software companies. And one that's been growing is consulting firms. And that is not just the individual who decides, maybe I'm retiring from my first career and I'm going to do some consulting. These are actual companies that are hiring people. So there are larger consulting concerns that are actually bringing on people, and we're seeing growth. In the bottom right, we see health services. And private education in the national coding system is mixed in with this, but it's largely the health services component. And as you probably know, health services has been growing for many, many years. And I like to make the point, this is not a trend line. This is actual monthly employment numbers, but it looks like a trend line. It is so steady going up across the graph. We don't know exactly what the impact of federal or state healthcare changes will be. Maybe it'll change the line. It almost certainly will change some of the jobs in healthcare, but the trend speaks for itself. Healthcare clearly has been going up for a long time and will continue to do so.
I'm curious about the combination of private educational and health services. You said that was a federal code, or why do they group those, and what whether there's data that would show us what the lines look like for each of those separately.
Madam Chair and Representative Holvey, I'm smiling because yes, there is. I was actually on the East Coast until about 1 o'clock this morning, and one of the emails I sent Nick from O'Hare Airport yesterday was, could we replace this one with just the healthcare? And by the time the email came through, it was too late to do that, and we definitely can do that. We could send it to you very easily. But again, the healthcare component of this is about 80 or 90%. So the trend you're seeing here is completely driven by the healthcare part of the industry. So, okay?
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank
you. Now, I just said some industries are doing quite well. There are a number of industries that have bounced back from their recession lows. Most of them aren't yet at the pre-recession levels, like these two, but they are bouncing back. Then there's others, and construction is really the poster child, mm-hmm. where the bounce back truly has not happened. Most people said that when construction was at that peak, it was not a sustainable level. People knew that. They really knew that it was going to come down at some point. But I would also say that I don't remember anybody saying it would come down as far as it did. And now here we are, 4 or 5 years into this recession recovery, and you can see construction has not bounced back a lot. Yes, there's some bright spots on the horizon, but in terms of actual jobs, it's a really tough place. And construction lost 35,000 jobs, which was one out of every three jobs in the entire industry.
Oh, really?
Now, if that's one company and you lay off 30% of your workers, that's a huge deal. When that's an entire industry of 100,000 people, that's incredible. Mm-hmm. To suddenly be down one-third, and as you can see, not a lot coming back. Let me transition at this point to yesterday's news release, and Nick's our front person for the TV and interviews on the news release. So Nick will take over with this, and he'll do the next section for us.
Madam Chair, Madam Chair, representatives of the committee, for the record, I'm Nick Belatrix, State Employment Economist for the Oregon Employment Department. And in April, the Oregon's unemployment rate fell to 8.0%, down from 8.2% the month before. We're now at the lowest that the unemployment rate has been since October 2008, in the height of the financial crisis. Non-farm payroll jobs added 3,700 in April, which is a good amount of jobs to add in 1 month. Payroll employment has now risen for 7 months in a row, so we're seeing continued job gains. And over the year, Oregon added 27,500 jobs. So that's all good news. Confusing the issue a little bit is the labor force participation rate, which fell to 61.9%. That's the lowest since records have been kept for Oregon and since 1976. And part of the fall was due to labor force dropping by 6,700 jobs. And that's both people on both sides of the equation, folks who are employed and folks who are unemployed.
Could you explain what the labor force participation rate is?
Madam Chair, yes, I have a slide that will explain that more. The labor force participation rate isn't a commonly followed statistic. Labor economists like us keep track of it. It really hasn't done much over time to gather such attention. Now that it's reaching record lows in Oregon, it's getting a lot of attention. So we're working on a special report that talks about the labor force. And that's what I guess brings me here to talk about today. The overall labor force has now fallen for 17 months in a row. And that's an unusual situation for Oregon. Historically, we've been adding labor force. And the reason is the labor force is driven by population growth and demographics, social trends, and, of course, the economy. So trends of all these factors point towards a falling participation rate. This graph looks at the population growth, one of the large drivers in the overall labor force. And you see Oregon has added people for the most part, as far as these records go back, except for the deep recession of the early 80s. And through this history, Oregon's labor force has only dropped three times. In 1982, when we lost a lot, started to lose population, Oregon's labor force fell. 2004, during that weak economy, and we also saw slow population growth. And now in 2012, it was the third time since records kept in 1976 that Oregon has actually lost labor force. Of course, not all the population is working age. So of the people who live here, the labor force participation rate has fallen really since about 1999. And then finally getting to explaining it more. The participation rate is calculated by the number of people employed, and that's part-time or full-time, just as long as they have a job, plus the number of people who are unemployed, so they're actively looking for work. And unemployed for these statistics, it doesn't matter whether or not they're receiving unemployment insurance benefits, just if they don't have a job and are available to work and actively looking for a job. And that's divided by the civilian non-institutional population. So the population over the age 16, all the way up, that's not in active duty in the armed forces or residing in prisons or in homes for the aged. So common questions related to this are students included. Well, if they're actively looking for work or have a job, then they're part of the labor force. If they're just going to school full-time, not looking for a job, they're not in the labor force.
Sorry, just a real quick question. So in your definition of unemployed, how do you gather the data of whether or not they're available and currently working, looking for work, regardless of their unemployment insurance eligibility? Are they signed up or with the employment department to get into that statistic, or where do you get that information?
Madam Chair, Representative Holvey, great question. It's calculated by the Federal Bureau of Labor Statistics through a household survey called the Current Population Survey. So essentially they're contacting people at their households and asking about them and family members, whether or not they're working or actively looking for work, and a series of questions like that to make the determination.
So do you feel that's an accurate representation of data from that survey? I've never heard anybody getting a survey like that.
Oh, there are roughly 1,000 folks, households in Oregon that are part of the survey, and about 60,000 nationwide. So that helps.
Madam Chair and Representative Holvey, I'll just jump in and say that that's one of the reasons why we often say don't overreact to monthly ups and downs in the unemployment rate, because it is based in large part on this survey. So, you know, the up 2/10, down 3/10, that may not mean a lot, but over a long time period, yes, that trend is very meaningful, and that's this labor force trend is definitely very significant and meaningful.
Thank you.
Retirees are also calculated in the civilian non-institutional population. So one misconception about the participation rate is that it's just working age population, but it's everyone 16 and older. And undocumented immigrants are also counted. They're sometimes asked how they affect. So We mentioned that the labor force participation rate is the lowest it's been since 1976, but that's as far as records go back for Oregon. It likely was lower as it was in the U.S. prior to 1976. So it's not necessarily that we've never been in these waters before. It's just no one had charted prior to 1976. And this graph looks at the participation rate by age group, and this is where we really see how the social shifts and demographics play into the overall calculation. The age groups on the top are really the prime working age groups that have high participation rates, and we'll see below that group, that first one that's trending up are older workers in the 55 to 64 age group who have been increasing their participation rate. So on top of the story of overall participation rates falling, we're seeing older workers more likely to participate, and that's happening with the 65 years and older group also. The big drop here is with teenage workers, and that trend has been going down since 2000. And this is a national trend also, though these are Oregon numbers. We see the same thing nationally by age group.
Now, do you have any speculation as to why? I mean, I do, but that's just...
Madam Chair, for the teen workers, the research shows that it has largely to do with competition for the available jobs, competition from older workers, and also they're spending more time on their school and their education.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Since we're having to head out, is there a way we can get this, or has it been emailed to us?
Actually, I asked Jan to get copies of them in color for the committee.
And it's on OLIS.
Yeah. I was looking on OLIS. Is it...
Pardon?
What's it under? Or I must have missed it.
It's just under meeting materials.
Okay.
So, Madam Chair,
I know that some of our other members have another meeting to go to, but please continue.
Well, sorry,
and we'll get other information to you.
And let me just say to those that are leaving, obviously, if you do have follow-up questions, once you've looked at it, Nick or I would be happy to answer by email or whatever you'd like. So, okay.
I could real quick before we head out. I mean, just looking at all the trends and stuff, does it look like things are going up slower? I know for our business and stuff in Oregon, there's not a big focus because we don't see a lot of growth happening here, and we're looking in other states, and that's where our focus has been, is in other states. I'm just wondering if you've seen any different trends, because I know most of our sales and a lot of the stuff that we have going on is in the Southeast and the South, a little bit in the North, but mainly in the southern part of the U.S. Is there anything different that you're seeing or any surprises we should see in Oregon as far as employment changes or manufacturing changes?
So Madam Chair and Representative Widener, I think we are on a much better path of recovery. As Nick said, 7 straight months of growth is the best we've seen in a very long time. There are probably some states that are doing better than that. One of the interesting things, and actually our next section, including manufacturing, is the fact that some companies seem to be actually doing quite well, but they don't need as many workers. And I'll go into this in more detail and be happy to chat with you about it. But that idea that companies may be producing more, actually, you know, serving more customers, but they're doing it with a need for fewer workers than they had before. And again, that comes back to that concept of a jobless recovery, where overall things are doing better, but we're not getting back close to those old employment levels. There are also clearly some states, you know, the Dakotas, for example, who are doing great with very low unemployment rates, higher employment because of energy-related work. So those are very different to anything that's going on for Oregon or for most other states, but those are sort of outliers.
And my concern when I was looking at that when you're showing it is I'm seeing a huge growth in the healthcare industry. Well, Oregon's one of the states that's throwing a bunch of money. I mean, we're growing 39%, I think, is what our budget's up this year in healthcare. So, I mean, the state's throwing a bunch of money at that. And in 3 years, and we have to come up with a 10% match and things like that, you're going to see a lot of that go away. So I'm just wondering, in the industrial, and we can take this offline in my office, I'd be kind of curious just to see what's going on in the meat and potatoes of the world that's going to basically fund us for everything that we do here at the right. state. So
we'll be happy to come meet with you if you'd like to.
I would like that very much.
All right. Thanks. So, Madam Chair, continuing, sort of moving on to the next theme, if you put together some of the things that we've already said, job growth is pretty sluggish. So the takeaway message there is businesses don't need as many workers, and there's a lot of unemployed, so loads of people out there available. Okay. And yet we have this persistent theme in the last few years that businesses cannot find the qualified workers they need. And that's been a real puzzle to us. So we've done some work on it. We've done some surveys on it. We've actually talked to businesses quite a bit to learn more about it. Let me step you through just sort of a quick overview of this. This graph basically looks at job growth over the last year, and all of the ones going to the right, those are industries that employ more people today than they did a year ago. So that's pretty positive. That might suggest, yes, there's a reasonable demand for workers. And the danger is if we take that completely on its own, and we'll use construction, which is the second one down, we'll use construction as an example. If you take that on its own, you might get the takeaway message, construction has been adding jobs, therefore we need to train construction workers. Okay, now I already showed you the graph of construction earlier. What this one shows us, in the black bars here, tell us how many jobs are projected to be added by the state economist in the forecast that you all rely on. This is how many jobs are projected to be added in the next 2 years, in black. In red is the number of jobs that were lost in the last few years, from the beginning of the recession to the current time. So let's take the second line down, healthcare. And what that tells us is we expect there to be maybe 10,000 jobs in healthcare, new jobs, in the next couple years. And there is no red bar there, which means there were not many, if any, people laid off in healthcare. So do we need to be training healthcare workers? Yeah, I think we do. I think we have done, and we've been doing that. It's nothing new. We've been doing that for years. If you go to the very bottom one, obviously I'm not going to step you through all of these. If you go to the very bottom one, you can see construction also adding about 10,000 jobs in the next couple years. So again, absent the knowledge of what's happened, you may think, well, we need to train construction workers. But the red bar shows you there's about 30,000 construction workers, quote, quote, on the bench. And these are people that were working in construction 3, 4, 5 years ago, and I would guess that many of them have the skills. They were doing the job. They were skilled journey-level people. They were laborers. They were whatever. And they would love to be working. We may not need to be training all these 10,000 because there's people out there. I'll pause here because I can see Representative Holvey is trying to get attention.
Question. So your assumption in that, and correct me if I'm wrong, your assumption in that is that those laid off construction workers are still actively unemployed and seeking work in that same field. Do you have any statistics that show that they're still there, or have they gone to other industries or to other states, and you know, specifically? Or, you know, I'm just kind of wondering, because I've seen an exodus from the industry of those laid off workers who are no longer there, no longer in union halls. The population has dropped, no longer, you know, they've moved on to find some other industry to work in because of the, you know, the huge decline in the industry. Right. So is that taking that into account in that kind of a graph and making the statement that you don't need to train people?
Right. So Madam Chair and Representative Holvey, you know, I'll never go as far as saying you absolutely don't need to train anybody, because there will be growth over the years and there will be retirements and there will be other things like that. We don't have data to say that all 30,000 are sitting here in Oregon just waiting for a job. But it's hard for me to picture a scenario on the other extreme where all 30,000 have completely given up on construction and or left Oregon. Because remember, most other states aren't doing any better than we are. Mm-hmm. There are exceptions, but the vast majority of the nation isn't doing much different than we are, particularly in the construction industry. They're not doing much better. So even if we agree that half of them have moved to other industries or left the state, that still leaves 15,000 construction workers. And so my point here is to simply say, certainly what we hear is that there are construction workers who would love to be working back in those highly skilled jobs for many of them, But if they are working, it's a job here or there. It is not a consistent employment that they certainly had in the, you know, the mid early 2000s. They were doing much bigger jobs and working for longer.
Thank you,
Representative Matthews.
Specific to the graph, I'm just curious. I see that basically no loss in state government. I see local government had substantial, well, you know, not substantial compared to construction, but 6,000 or so. How accurate is that? I've heard from several, I mean, you know, having been part of the budget since just 2009, I know we've lost positions. So are they just that we haven't lost them in the thousands? Is that what it is? And it just doesn't show?
Madam Chair and Representative Matthews, are you talking about state government?
Yes.
Particularly, yeah. I think the big issue there is most of state government has had job losses. There was some increases in the early part of the recession, thanks to those ARRA, or American Recovery Act, I forget the full acronym, stimulus funds, they were called. But as those went away, a lot of state government has had reductions, but the education side of state government has actually had job growth. And part of that is what Nick was talking about earlier, where a lot of young people are either staying in school or going back to school, perhaps in part because the job market is so bad. So they're taking that time, instead of being unemployed, they're adding to their education with the hope of a better future.
I see.
So Nick, do you want to add to that, or is that a good summary? Okay. So it's definitely the education side of state government, not the rest of people like our agency and many others. Okay, let me move on. Manufacturing is another key industry, of course, in Oregon. Unlike the construction graph that I showed you earlier, manufacturing's trend over many recessions has been to go down quite a bit and then come back partway. It never comes back to the starting point. And then the next recession comes and it goes down quite a bit and it comes back partway. And you know, I attend national meetings with my peers across the nation, and people are always fascinated with the fact that Oregon actually has a very good and strong manufacturing sector. They don't think of us that way. You know, they think of Michigan and Indiana and Ohio, but they don't think of Oregon, and they see a graph like this and they're surprised at how well we're doing compared with some states. But I think we are in a scenario here where some manufacturing companies may be doing quite well in terms of profits, doing very well in terms of production, but they simply don't need as many workers as they used to need. And in many cases, because they've moved to such a high level of technology and automation, they don't need the same kinds of workers as they used to need. And so in our presentations over the last couple years, when we've talked to manufacturing companies, many of them have said, we just don't need or want the workers that we laid off 5 years ago. That's not the people we want back. So my comment about there's a lot of laid off manufacturing workers, how come you can't find people, manufacturing companies, it's because we want different people now, because we've become so much more technology focused and automated.
Thank you. Can you, it surprised me as well, the manufacturing numbers. Who are they? Is that, for example, include Intel, which I thought was largely designed, or is that Precision Cast Parts, Oregon Iron Works? Or is that more broadly distributed across Oregon?
Madam Chair and Representative Barton, yes and yes.
Intel's included in that?
It is widely distributed, yes. It would include the semiconductor firms.
Okay.
It includes a whole bunch of firms that we think of as high tech, many of them in Washington County, but not all. I mean, that's sort of the stereotype. It includes a lot of firms in what we would call heavy manufacturing, metals, fabricated metals, transportation equipment, you mentioned. It's included over the years food products, which used to be the sort of 30 or 40 year ago Oregon, it was fresh vegetables, frozen, canned, and now it includes some of that, but also a much more diverse coffee, chocolate, all of those things, some of them small companies, but they've seen growth in Oregon. And of course, it still includes the very important wood products industry, which we know is way down from its peaks of 30 or 40 years ago, but it's still very important in some of our rural areas. So it's a huge range of industries. One of our slides that we use in other presentations, though, does show that manufacturing used to be much more prevalent in the non-Portland areas, and now two-thirds of all the manufacturing jobs in Oregon are in the Portland area. It used to be about half and half. because we've seen such a decline in the wood products industries, which were mostly rural, and a huge success story in Portland, Greater Portland, you know, Washington, Clackamas, Multnomah counties particularly, where their manufacturing with the transportation, metals, high tech has gone up. So it's a key industry.
I just want to repeat that. So 2/3 of Oregon manufacturing is in the Portland metro area. Is that right?
Correct. Yes.
This is fascinating. Thank you for coming in.
Yeah. You're welcome. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I have a question about the wood products industry. Do you have statistics that show the number of jobs per 1,000 board feet harvested?
Mr. Belichick, Madam Chair, Mr. Belichick says yes.
I'd be very interested in those statistics.
Madam Chair, Representative Holvey, we keep track of those. I don't know them off the top of my head, but we can certainly get them to you.
Thank you.
Because I, you know, we talk about automation. Because I've seen in the wood products industry where it used to take 3 people to fall a tree, and now it takes 1 machine that grabs it, trims it, cuts it, stacks it. Right. So,
and I will add, this has been going on for decades. In my very early career, I toured a mill out in Dallas, Oregon. And a very elderly gentleman retired, but he'd spent his whole life in the mill. He was giving one of these public tours, and we looked down on the sawmill floor, and there were 7, 8, 9, 10 guys with pipe poles. Their only job, as these logs went round, was to free them if they got jammed. And this older guy was telling the group of us touring, you know, when I started here, there was 200 men, and he said men, working in this mill, and now there's 7 or 10, and there's another 7 or 10 up here running the computers, and that was probably about 1985, 1987. So, you know, you think where we are today. So it isn't, you know, the automation is not a brand new trend of the last decade. It's been going on for ages, but clearly more and more and more. So back to the shortage of workers, you know, roughly, we do a vacancy survey. Roughly the story is there's about 5 unemployed people for every private sector vacancy in the state, and yet we still do here, we cannot find the qualified workers we need. And it's a very puzzling thing. Healthcare, we've talked about. Manufacturing, we've talked about. Truck driving is another one where we hear that over and over. So for the first time ever, we asked a question about this on what used to be an annual vacancy survey. We're now doing it quarterly. And we were very surprised over in the far right here. 44% of all the vacancies in Oregon in October of last year, this was according to the businesses, 44% of those vacancies were difficult to fill. Even in this time of slow growth and lots of unemployed people. So we dug deeper and we asked for a one-sentence statement as to why the opening was difficult to fill. And remember, this is coming from the business perspective, right? The biggest single reason, interestingly, was unfavorable working conditions. And that's coming from the business.
And it was
unfavorable working conditions.
Meaning?
And that could be anything from where I live out of Silverton in the middle of a bunch of Christmas tree farms. And I watch my neighbors and their workers harvesting Christmas trees in November. And it's sleeting and foggy and cold. Most people would say that's an unfavorable working condition. Right. It might be cold, noisy, smelly, dirty, rotten shifts. It could be all kinds of things. But that was one of the business's points of view. And we grouped these very briefly. The things on the right are perhaps things that the businesses themselves might want to try to do something about. Maybe it's not possible always, but at least be aware of it. The things on the left, we're talking to the community colleges and the workforce boards, and we're digging a lot deeper into these data to say, so what particular certifications are lacking? What is it among people with associate degrees that is not clicking for businesses? Is it the work experience? Is it that they don't have that particular certification? So our staff are digging really deep into these responses and then feeding that off to the workforce system and the community colleges, because certainly all of us want to make sure that if a business has openings, we want to make sure that those Oregonians have the skills and the certificate and the license and the work experience, whatever it is, to help them be successful. We don't,
and early enough that they can train people as the workforce really needs to be employed.
Exactly.
And not necessarily waiting until the technology is already there, saying, now we train you on this. So.
Hi, Madam Chair. Okay. And some of them may be as simple as transferring skills they have into a certification. And that may be very easy, and some of it is not easy at all. There's a little bit of pushback on this, and it's a fascinating national discussion. And if you think this is interesting, I'll just suggest you Google this Peter Capelli guy. We've been watching him for maybe a year now. To summarize his perspective, and I'm not saying that it's our perspective, I just throw it out because it's a very interesting debate. He really feels that businesses, in many cases, are being too picky. They know there's a lot of unemployed people, and they feel like they should be able to find the perfect candidate, and they don't want to do on-the-job training. And I'm not saying that we're supporting that. I'm saying it's an interesting debate that's out there. I'm sure there's a little bit of truth, both sides of the argument. So if you find that interesting, I would encourage you to just take a look. Let me shift to the impact on young people. That's been a huge concern for us through this recession. I mean, we've been concerned about any Oregonians who were part of that 250,000 unemployed. But as we look to so many of our young people, and some of us in this room probably have children in the late teens, early 20s, and I love to tell the story, and it's a completely made-up story. during my presentations, I love to just say, let's think of our daughter, who graduated with an accounting degree in 2008. So it's a relevant degree. It's required in many businesses, many industries. And our daughter thought she was going to get a job, right? Accounting degrees, that's really business relevant. And in the summer of 2008, the economy was starting to really fall apart, and only half of her graduating class found jobs in accounting. And our daughter wasn't one of them. So she found a job eventually. She was unemployed for a while. She found a job eventually, but it wasn't in accounting. It was much lower wage. And she was thinking, well, by the summer of 2009, you know, that post-college hiring cycle will kick in, and I'm sure I'll find a job in accounting then. And between the summer of 2008 and the summer of 2009, things completely fell apart. So now she's competing with half of her own graduating class, the new graduating class, and a bunch of accountants that just got laid off, mm-hmm. some of them with 20 years experience.
That's interesting.
And then you think through to 2010 and 2011, and there wasn't much growth. You saw the slow growth. 2012, a little bit better. 2013, maybe a little bit better. And completely oversimplifying here, our daughter might be competing against 5.5 years of graduates mm-hmm. and still a few unemployed accountants. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty tough job market compared with what she thought when she started college in 2004 or 5. And do we care about that? Well, we care because it's our daughter. But we care even if it's not our daughter, because think about what happened to you in the early part of your career. You're making contacts, you're getting promotions, you're building income, you're saving for a car, you're paying rent, you're saving for a house, you're buying a house. You're getting
your early career start, paying off student loans.
And so yeah. Our daughter is not only suffering herself, and we're suffering as her parents, but all those businesses that she would be buying things from, the vacations she didn't take, the car she didn't buy, the home she didn't pay for, the rent she didn't pay because she moved back in with you, mm-hmm. all those things are impacted. And that's why so many businesses struggled in this economy, because our daughter was one of tens of thousands of all ages who couldn't do all those things. And that's what really took the economy even further down. So as we look through, there's enormous. I've spoken to groups who talk a lot about the psychological impact. People who have been unemployed 1, 2, 3 years, it's not just a financial impact. It is a huge psychological, emotional impact that they have to work through. And data do show that our daughter, if she's in that situation, she will never make up those lost years of earnings. Her lifetime earnings will be measurably lower. And that affects, ultimately, the house she buys and all those other big lifetime expenses compared with where she otherwise would have been. Here's a graph that just shows unemployment rates for different age groups. And, you know, we mentioned to you that the unemployment rate for Oregonians was 8%, but the unemployment rate for teenagers, actually teens through 24, it's more than double that. And these are the young people who are in the labor force. Remember Nick's conversation. These are the ones who are actively employed or actively looking for work unemployed. This isn't the ones that aren't even trying. So even of those young people who are actively trying, yes, their unemployment rate is 16, 17 or so percent. The last slide on this, it's not just about the ones who are graduating from college. The number of teenagers working in Oregon is down to about half of what it used to be. And some would say that may be a good thing. Those teenagers are being super helpful around the house. They're studying more. They're engaging in civic volunteering. And, you know, whenever Nick or I say that, we usually get the smiles that, you know, that I just got from your administrator here. Because on the other hand, maybe they're not doing all, you know, things that are that productive with their time, and they're losing out on those great early work experience, learning about hard work and showing up on time and customer service ethic and so on. They're not doing those things in part because there aren't that many of those jobs as there used to be, and as Nick said earlier, in part because where there are those jobs, people our age are taking them. You think about your daily lives and the places you shop and buy gas and get your lattes and all those things. You're much more likely to be served by someone in their 40s and 50s than you used to be. It used to be mostly teenagers.
Have you ever looked at the teenagers? I'm just looking at, I worked with teenagers and I work with teenagers now. And it's the idea of, well, I don't want that job. It's not fun. I mean, you know, I don't think we ever thought of that when we were growing up, that, you know, waiting tables was not fun. But it was, and so I didn't know if there's, because I know you had, like, with unemployment for the younger folks, some of the psychological factors. But I'm wondering how much of it is societal. You know?
I
don't want to work at McDonald's because it's not cool.
Right. Well, mm-hmm. Yeah. Madam Chair, I'm sure some of it is, and we hear the same things. And again, I think some of it for some of them is just a giving up, because maybe they did apply for 10 or 20 or 100 jobs, nothing came, and they give up, knowing in part that these older people are taking the jobs that should be theirs.
Yeah.
And there is some truth to that, too. Let's transition to close here. I was particularly looking at the makeup of your committee. In most of my speeches, I end with a brief mention of Oregon's rural areas. You know, many of you know, we know, that 75% of the population, 75% of the jobs are between Portland and Eugene. So we like to just make that point that things are very different in some other parts of Oregon. And again, you know, given the makeup of this committee, I think it's a point just worth making. I'm sure you all know it, but let's just make that point. So Nick's going to step through the last few slides, just showing you some facts about the rural areas that are pretty serious.
Well, I mentioned earlier that the state unemployment rate is 8% now. It's actually lower in the Portland metro area, which means it needs to be higher in the balance of the state and for it to work out. And it is in non-metro areas, so outside of the larger counties, the unemployment rate is around 10%. And in some counties, even higher. So some of the central Oregon counties and southern Oregon, we're seeing unemployment rates well above the state average. A lot of the good news we have about the economy is concentrated in the metro areas.
If we go back to that, I mean, why Hood River, Benton, like Sherman and Gilliam County have low unemployment? Because I know Hood River has, you know, some corporate, I mean, like the Dalles and so on, you know, and what with Wasco County, some corporations are going in, but Gilliam and Sherman?
Wasco?
Not that we don't love them, but yeah.
And
Madam Chair, we do see some improvement in the economy there all along the gorge area. It's actually a growing area of the state for the economy, but those are also areas that are smaller, so fewer people may be moving in and out of their employment situation, and maybe fewer layoffs during the recession. And we'll actually see from this slide, this is labor force participation rates by county, and the participation rate is high along the Columbia. And so the people who are there are more likely to be working. Whereas throughout the rest of the state, it's lower. And these are areas that are hit hard by the timber industry. Mm-hmm. And another thing that we're seeing with this map is that the counties that tend to be older have a lower participation rate. So that's the demographic story in some of these counties.
On the gorge, how much of that has to do with agriculture?
Madam Chair, I'm not sure the breakout, but the agriculture and food processing are doing well, as well as some other industries. So, yeah, I think it's more broad than just the agricultural sector. This graph is an index of actual job growth by area, and we can see that the job growth during the recovery is concentrated in the Portland area, much more so than when we were showing the unemployment rates where it's coming down in some of the other non-metro areas. We haven't seen a lot of job growth in the other metro areas outside of the Portland area or in the non-metro areas. Although this graph goes through 2012, in more recent months, we're starting to see some growth in the other metro areas, like in Bend and Medford. So, and things aren't projected to change all that much from this story. Our employment projections for through 2020 show that the growth will continue to be pretty much where it is, and the rural areas aren't expecting to add many jobs going forward. This, of course, has an effect on the population and the demographic trends in rural areas. Truly disheartening, as the slide shows. Some counties are just losing population, according between the last two decennial census counts, and a lot of this population loss is among younger people. In six counties, the median age is 50 or older compared to the overall median age of about 38 for the state.
Quite a gap.
Yeah, so Madam Chair, I'll just wrap up here. And again, thanks so much for letting us visit this morning. And it looks like the time's working out. When I give this presentation around the state, you know, in many different areas, you can sense for some of those rural counties, this loss of the young people is of great concern. And one person said to me last year, well, isn't that true of all rural areas? You know, what the implication was, what's the big deal? And one of the answers was, yes, it has been true of many rural areas across the United States. But until this decennial census, it wasn't really very true for most of Oregon, even our very rural counties. So the fact that we're now seeing that, it is something of a problem. And if you're trying to attract, you know, if you're an economic development official and you're trying to attract companies to your location, and they just go to the basic census data and say, well, it looks like a bunch of young people are leaving town,
yeah,
that's something you've got to get over in terms of a sales pitch. I recently gave, Nick and I both give quite a few presentations, as do many of our staff, and I recently gave a similar one to a teachers conference about a month ago, and this was a conclusion slide I gave to them, and I chose to share it again today. You know, part of it is we're just in a time of massive change. It's not just about the Great Recession. We've been so focused on that for the last 5 years, but there's a whole lot of other things going on, and particularly this labor force change. We knew the baby boomers were getting older. We knew this would be coming, but I don't think we knew how the participation of the young people would be going down so dramatically. That, I don't think any of us saw coming. We knew that the 65, 70-year-olds would be getting there and obviously would be participating less. There's a lot of different things, demographic, global, technology, there's all kinds of things going on. But I think if you get down to that bottom slide, you know, when we look at our young people, we publish a lot of career information. We love it if young people look at that career information because it can help guide them. Not to say everybody needs a bachelor's degree and not to say everybody should go into healthcare, but depending on their interests, it can guide them into different paths. But the bottom line is, have some great relevant skills, have some great relevant work ethic skills, and that comes up over and over again in our surveys. We've done surveys of businesses saying, what are the skills that you most are lacking in your job applicants? And don't bother talking about soft skills, because we know that. We hear that all the time. And businesses still say, no, we've got to talk about soft skills. That is a huge problem. The showing up on time, you know, the good attitude, the respect, the trustworthiness. And some would say, and people smile when I say this, but some businesses would put passing the drug test in the soft skills category. You're like, well, is that a soft skill? Well, you know, it's not a technical skill, so I guess it has to fit somewhere. And then choosing a great attitude is super important. Let me wrap up by saying, and I know some folks have left, but maybe this word can get to them. If you found this interesting and helpful, and certainly body language suggests some of you did, we do have a blog, we have a Twitter feed, we post on the blog usually once a day, sometimes every other day, sometimes twice. But if you want to sort of just stay in tune with what we're seeing, what we're thinking, then please take note of this last slide. I mean, everything is on our website, and there's a massive information there, including new studies like the labor force one will be there. But just a little daily tweet or a daily blog feed from us might help you to stay in touch with what we're thinking. So
I check out your blog maybe once a week or so, largely because I don't have any friends and that's what I do for fun. Which of you, who writes it? Is it a team effort? I all somehow thought it was one of you guys, actually.
Right, Madam Chair.
Friday
point. Barton, actually, it's neither of us for the most part. Huh. It is two of our colleagues who work very closely with us. It started about 4 years ago with a couple of our young
I love
employees.
The graphs.
So, okay, that's great. And I hope Gail and others are listening to this to enjoy that. It's usually two or three of our economists who take turns, and anything they find that's interesting, you know they will put it up and put some graphs. So thank you.
I really do enjoy it.
That's wonderful. Excellent.
So. Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you so much for the presentation. Very, very enlightening. Some things we kind of assumed, but to have it backed up by the department kind of makes our job a little harder, I guess.
In some ways.
Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, I close the meeting of the House Business and Labor.
Hey, Graham.